Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the September 21 edition of Commodity Week. November soybeans, the commodity most had expected to stay strong this fall, faded by more than a dollar for the week. We'll wonder why and ask about next week's quarterly grain stocks report today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. In studio today, our guests include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from West Lafayette, Indiana, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. And traveling northward to Wisconsin, Jackie Vakes is on the phone line from Stuart Peterson. She, too, is from Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, it was a down week in Chicago for corn, soybeans, and wheat, and I really can't get my head wrapped around it all. So I want to know why that was the case, and maybe we can divide this up by commodity. Jackie Vakes, why don't you start with soybeans?
Well, I think most of us felt a lot like you did, especially on Monday when we saw the action in the market. I'd have to say probably some of the down action certainly came because we saw pent-up harvest pressure. There was a very open week this last weekend, and I believe that, you know, when they came in to start to sell corn, there was also some bean harvest that had gone on, and we saw that happen. And a pretty well-held opinion that it was pushed into black box stops, especially when we got to that 40-day moving average, and just couldn't recover well from that. When you look at it at the overall, the bigger picture, I believe the trade was very concerned about informers acres that were coming out today. They actually did come in 2.5 million acres bigger on the 2012 crop than what the USDA has. And therefore, you know, there was a lot of concern about that. I think, you know, we're hearing yields. Yields in some places are better than they expected them to be. In other places, not as good. And so it's still very variable. But, you know, it was one of those weeks where, just like any time that we get into a harvest pressure circumstance, when there's not much other news out there and we didn't have an awful lot going on, you see the market open itself up. Trade volume just wasn't as good as it should have been either. You know, this grain stocks report has everybody concerned. From what I see, I know the average, and I know from myself, the average gets to stay about where we were at 130 million for this year. But now, you know, with the extra acres, the big question comes, is that going to be the truth or not? We don't know.
Bill Mayer, take up the corn.
Yeah, and I think on corn, as always, and as Jackie mentioned, there's always several factors, but I'm going to kind of look at first half of the week, last half of the week. I think we had harvest pressure, as was mentioned. I think not so much just the harvest pressure, but the fact that the funds were selling along with the farmer, and there wasn't a lot of buyers there. The buyers seemed to, the users seemed to be able to kind of outstare the sellers and hold back on coming in getting stuff bought. I think, you know, the soybean market really pulled the corn market down with it. Then on Wednesday, we tried to rally the corn. We really saw open interest just stay flat. So that's telling you that nobody's really willing to jump in there and put on new long positions. And then I think that followed through in the latter half of the week that we saw that, and it just technically we had to go down there and test that 739. That's the good news on East Corn. We did hold that previous low. We've held that three times now, so I think that's pretty good support there. But it's going to be tough to get a rally here back into the end of the week. I think one last thing was we did have October options going off, and 750 had a lot of open interest in it. So I think that kind of ended up today why we ended up around that 750 mark.
And Bill Gentry, wheat finished lower as well.
Yeah, but it trimmed its losses significantly in the second part of the week. Some surprise rains in Australia last weekend kind of put the wheat under duress because they had been needing some rains. I also think that the world markets were starting to firm up by Wednesday. We've also got a twisted story out of Russia. They had their ag minister recently said that they were not going to implement export bans or curbs. And then last night or this morning, the economic minister comes in and says, yeah, well, maybe we will. So once you get that worry into the market, the shorts kind of said, well, I don't think I need to press this, and kind of covered their shorts.
All right, let's stay with wheat for just a bit. December contract, or July contract, rather, of next year settled at $8.71.5. It was down 21 and a quarter. For those people, Bill, who have decided they're going to go ahead and plant wheat this fall, do you think it's a good or a bad idea that they market at this time?
At this time, we're holding back on some marketing, looking for some slightly higher levels. We just got through the insurance price discovery period. That price is about 30 cents below the market, I believe, for July next year's futures.
I think it's hard to sell wheat ahead, and I understand that because you don't know. It's a little bit harder to get it up and make sure it makes it through the winter. But I like the idea of coming in, and if in a lot of areas you can only cover 75% with crop insurance, maybe getting most of that, you know, additional bushels covered if you can.
Oh, we better go for our tiebreaker. Jackie Bakes?
Well, I'm in both camps. I'm not doing any advanced sales at all. I am, however, telling guys that I think that there's a time in the near future we're going to have to get some puts in place. And every time Russia comes out and talks, we see a rally in wheat, and then it kind of dies back. And that rally, I believe, is coming out of the idea that for every bushel that Russia sells, of course, that's one less bushel they're going to have available, and that's going to make us more attractive. But that's going to be built in. And the idea that we're not going to get a new crop, guys are going to plant it. Whether it comes out of the ground, nobody's going to know that for quite a while. So I think if you're going to make the commitment to plant, you have to do something to protect downside.
Soy complex now. November beans this week, a high of $17.36 and a quarter, low at $16.07 and a half. The Novi settled down $1.17 and a quarter at $16.21 and three quarters. November beans at $13.54. We're down 43 and three quarters. There were lots of big news things on the week. The 70-cent drop in the marketplace early in the week, and then after the market closed or thereabouts, Informa dropped some really unique numbers on the trade, and Jackie Bakes has talked to you just a little bit about those already. But soybean acres, Bill Gentry, were increased by 1.06 million acres from USDA's June acreage number to 77.1, and Informa says they did that off of the FSA numbers.
They very well could have, but I think as far as a market mover right now, the yield is going to be the driving force. I think with the rains that South America got, I think the trade got a little bit more comfortable that their production is going to get off to a reasonable start. And our yield is still in play. You know, some of us have bumped our yield estimates up a little bit, but they're still not that big. So I think that's the number that's going to determine the bottom line, not the acreage.
Bill Mayer?
And I think it's a harvest acreage this year, too, that is important, of course. But I guess the number I kind of looked at that surprised me, or I questioned a little bit, honestly, is next year's acres that they came out with. And, you know, they're showing adding another 4 million acres to the, you know, corn, wheat, and soybean bunch. And that just seems like a lot. We're even looking at the current good price level, that seems like a pretty hefty amount of increase again next year.
You think that's a big increase, Jackie?
No, I don't really think it's a big increase. In fact, I think that there are some traders that are actually looking for, you know, 100 million acres of corn, if not more than 100 million acres of corn, with a lot of stuff coming in out of the cotton acres. You know, when we took the trip down to New Orleans, we heard John Bondurant talk about the fact that there could be 4 million acres of cotton that actually move over into corn this year in the Delta. And so I don't think, I was not real surprised by it. I guess the bean number bumping up close to 80 million acres. The whole key to this entire complex for this next year on corn side is going to be seed availability, fertilizer availability. We have a lot of things that we have to cure yet on the river system to be able to get things to move the way that we want them to. And so, like any other, I mean, you can put a number out there, make a guess, but the farmer's still going to decide what's going to happen.
I suppose we can look forward to next year, but we have a lot of things yet to deal with this year. Actually, even with last year, the quarterly grain stocks report, Bill Mayer, will be released next Friday, and the numbers there are important, but I'm not sure that the trade has much of a handle on what USDA plans to do with that report.
No, and I mean, I think I saw an analyst guess on it this morning, and it says not including the billion bushels that was harvested on corn of this year's crop in August, but I mean, we got some guesses out there. How important it really is in the scheme of things, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I think that if you had some big surprise, if you're well below a billion bushels on corn, for example, or well above a billion two, you know, maybe that moves the market. But I guess I think the trade's kind of uncertain about it going in. But I'm not sure once we see the numbers that it's a big game changer.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is with the big supply number that we could see next Friday, it's masking our ability to measure demand period over period. So that decreases the transparency and, like Bill said, makes it very difficult to get the right answer.
Jackie, your thoughts?
Well, you know, the difficult part about getting the right answer is trying to figure out how the USDA is going to apply old crop corn and new crop corn. I mean, I talked to Joe Prasaki this afternoon, and basically, there just seems to be a huge hang-up because of trying to figure out what is the old crop year and what is the new crop year. And when you survey farmers and you survey the commercials, all they ask is how much old crop do you have in storage and how much new crop do you have in storage. It really doesn't give you a real good picture. The question that we talked about a little bit was, you know, if we wouldn't have had 1.1 billion bushels of early harvest, where would we have been on this crop this year? Had we been a month later, considering that we show that we had a 1.1 billion bushel carryout, is that a reflection of corn that was harvested in the harvest year here? And is that why we continue to get a higher production number as well as a higher carryout number? You know, all of those questions are going to have to be answered at some point in time. I'm going to go to the USDA data users meeting in October, and hopefully we'll find out more there. But it's going to definitely be a game changer, I believe. You know, it may not mean much, but it could be a huge change just because the trade has been so nervous about what's going to happen.
So no matter what happens, you think it could possibly be a game changer Friday of next week? Is that right?
That's what I'm saying. I think that what I think it'll be for us is just like when we had the USDA report. It's a great sigh of relief. It's like having the informer numbers out today. The trade took a big sigh of relief, and we saw buying coming into the close. We saw beans close positive after having been down 11 cents. I think it is having a little more confidence. It's just like when you have a Fed report coming out, you know, and how the dollar reacts. It's the same thing here. We need to find out where we're at, and then we'll begin to look at, okay, October is insurance month, you know, and what's going to happen and how far are we going to be harvested. I mean, at 25% harvest this last week, Monday, are we going to be 50% this week on corn? And, you know, we've never been this far before. So where are we in the marketplace? I think the trade is just trying to adjust to all of the things that have impacted us due to the drought.
So is everybody in agreement that harvest pressure is pretty harsh in the marketplace at this time?
I think so. I think that you're seeing lot of the corn being delivered to town, at least in the area that's been harvested the most right now. There's just not a lot of stuff getting put in the storage because of quality concerns on the farm. And the stuff that is coming into town, maybe up until this week, at least was being sold pretty heavily, I believe. So I think there's some harvest pressure.
I think there's episodic hedge pressure or harvest pressure, but I think the crop size is small enough that the market is digesting it very well. And especially when you're looking at a Friday and the market's recovered like they did today, I don't think that's indicative of heavy harvest selling. I think there's selling going on. But I also think think that the producers are being offered the free DP or the 3 cents a month DP, and they're taking that, which basically equates to a long position on the futures market.
Now, I almost hate to ask this question, but I'm going to because, well, everybody will want me to. Do you think that the market year high has been put in for new crop corn at this time?
For this calendar year?
For the marketing year, not the calendar year.
Not for the marketing year.
The 2012 crop, you're saying?
Yep.
I think it's probably a 60-40 odds that it has been, but you know, maybe even 50-50. I think there's still another run left in this market on corn myself.
And Jackie?
I agree, and I think we may first see those numbers when we come into the first quarter. But just because of all the other things that go on when you look at November and December in terms of the index funds and all the changing of positions. But I would have to go probably 40%, 60%. I really do think we can climb above the 849 unless basis can really do its job and get it out of farmers' hands. But they seem to be much more enthralled with a higher futures number than anything else.
We'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Bill Lapp of Omaha, Nebraska. This is Commodity.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was a very cool week across Illinois with temperatures almost 5 degrees below normal. Some rain fell over the state, but the amounts were generally less than half an inch. The forecast for this weekend is for mild temperatures and no rain. On Saturday, highs will range from the low 60s in northern Illinois to the upper 60s in southern Illinois. Saturday night, lows will be in the mid to upper 30s across much of the state. However, northwest Illinois could see temperatures close to the freezing mark. It will be more of the same on Sunday with highs in the 60s and lows Sunday night in the 30s. Temperatures will begin to warm slightly from Monday through Thursday with highs in the low to mid-70s and lows in the 50s. There is a chance of rain on Tuesday and Wednesday. The National Weather Service has released their new monthly and seasonal outlooks on Thursday. In Illinois, October has a higher risk of above-normal temperatures and below-normal precipitation. The 3-month outlook for October, November, and December also has an increased risk of above-normal temperatures with no word on how precipitation will look. They expect El Nino to arrive sometime in September. El Nino events are defined by exceptionally warm waters along the equator and the eastern Pacific Ocean. They change the weather patterns over the Pacific, which in turn change our weather patterns. Historically, Illinois has a tendency towards milder winters with warmer temperatures and less snowfall. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the September 21 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing of Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of West Lafayette, Indiana, along with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. On the phone line is Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Let's remind folks who you are and where you came from. First off, very quickly, you have about 25, 26 years of experience, and then you recognize that there was an opportunity, you say, in the diverse array of companies that deal with agriculture and the food industry. So you decided to become an independent consultant based there in Omaha. And you're dealing, I think, primarily with food companies at this point and procurement. Is this correct?
That is absolutely correct. You asked me to remind folks where I came from, and actually I was originally from Freeport, Illinois, so I have some connection there with your listeners at some degree. And yes, about 7 years ago, I decided to go out on my own. So the question for my clients that is asked is, when do I buy? So it's 180 degrees from the question on in terms of risk management for a producer, in terms of when do I sell and how do I best protect my profits.
Well, I wanted to know on that side, and from just a slight twist, is not when they buy, but how much they buy from the consumption side. Are there thoughts in the industry that they really need to cut back?
Well, the prevailing wisdom today versus 3 years ago, I'll just mention it, frame it that way, is that there's a great deal more interest in having more coverage, owning rather than 3 months, owning 6 or 9 months, or somebody who would typically own 6 months of some major input into their restaurant chain, they would own more like 12. A second major change that we've seen over the past couple of years is the use of cost-plus pricing on some protein and dairy items. And the way they do that is they base the price of something like chicken breast on the price of corn and soybean meal. So that makes that restaurant chain or food manufacturer liable for deciding when to buy corn, when to buy soybean meal, or when to lock in those prices so they can lock in a cost for that major input.
And just in general terms, I don't want you to give away any secrets, but what's your impression as far as the user in general? Is he got a fair amount of coverage on then, or is he pretty much in a hand-to-mouth situation?
Well, I'm a little biased because of the people I work with tend to have more coverage, I think, than maybe the general universe. But I would say median coverage would be through March on things like corn or soybean meal where they're in a cost-plus contract, or soybean oil, or for wheat. And like I said, you know, a couple of years ago, that would have been considerably less because there wouldn't there's been a lot of educational opportunities with these spikes in the market for them. And you know, there's a little bit of a runway. I would say there was I don't think it's enough to move the market necessarily, but there was a significant amount of buying interest this week and from end users on Monday when we saw the decline in the market.
When you look at that March time frame, let's say right now they might have some futures coverage on the books, but you know you're going to have to source the physical commodity. When we look at our areas and areas south, a lot of the farmers are letting loose of that inventory because they don't think it's going to store very well. It's not going to hold condition. How are you going to approach that come next March when a lot of the corn's already been run through the pipeline?
Right, that's a pretty big challenge for these guys because some of them have some basis risk, but a lot of them do not have that basis risk necessarily on corn and wheat. And my belief, and I think there's some evidence to this effect, that there's been so much storage built in the country that the basis can be a lot stronger and the basis can do a lot more of the work. My belief, since I've kind of given up on trying to figure out why the corn crop kept getting worse during the month of August, but the price didn't go up, I've flipped it to the other side. And Dr. Scott Irwin at Illinois has taught me this many years ago that sometimes you have to look at what the prices are doing to tell you what the balance sheet really, which direction the balance sheet should be going. And that seems to be the case the last month. And I guess it's my belief that however we're going to do it, I don't know, but it appears that we have enough negative influences on these market from a macro perspective that it'll make it difficult, in my judgment, to go back and reach contract highs in corn and wheat. Soybeans are a complete mystery why they're not at a higher price today. I'm just the data is overwhelming, and I maybe there's something with regard to China finally reaching a point where they'll buy less soybeans, and that affects the price of soybean meal and soybean oil. But that one is the one that's most confusing. But I guess my belief is that we're going to have volatile markets, and when we see these 20 or 30 cent dips in the market, which we may not see for another 2 or 3 months, when we do see them, be prepared to add another 3 months worth of coverage.
Bill, you know, we just had a cattle on feed report out today, and Are you working with the meat part of the industry other than poultry? Are you also working with, you know, pork and beef as well?
Right, pretty much across the gamut. I do less work with some of the soft commodities, cocoa, coffee, and sugar, but I work quite a bit with the protein sector. And the big question a lot of people have asked, there's a lot of lack of knowledge. I guess I'll just say that people thought the price of beef was running up over the past couple months, past 6 months, as a result of the drought. And you have to dispel that notion that the ongoing cyclical decline in the cattle supplies has been something that's been in place for several years, going to continue through 2013 and 2014. All the drought did was perhaps to amplify and extend that the length of that cycle. The individual cuts within the beef sector for these end users don't correlate well, certainly not with the feed cost, and don't even correlate well with live cattle futures. So when you look at hedging hamburger patties would be the most common. They're a combination of 50% lean trimmings from steers and heifers and 90% lean beef from cows. And there's virtually no correlation to live cattle futures or any other proxy. Or if there is one, I haven't found it, and I've looked high and low for it. So that's a really challenging market, and that's a commodity that in the end restaurants typically have to accept whatever the price is and negotiate overages on that to the best effect they can. But that's something they're so much of a price taker on.
Is your expectation that because you're dealing with cost plus and then the explanation you just gave us about beef, that the higher price of food has already been built into the marketplace for consumers?
I guess it's my belief it hasn't. And there's a couple things, and I digress there. The response by the pork industry and the broiler industry and the dairy industry, I think is going to be fairly limited. And if we move corn back higher over $8 again, then I will reserve the right to change my mind. But if we see moderation in prices sequentially quarter over quarter, the guys in these industries are going to take the mentality that they're in it for the long haul, and there's not going to be significant cuts in the dairy cow herd or in the size of number of sows or the broiler sector. So there's going to be an increase in costs, but it's not going to be as extreme as what current feed costs and the negative margin environment they're in might suggest. My belief on food inflation is that we've had an increase in feed costs and an increase in grain prices, and some of that is being felt by restaurants and food manufacturers today. But it's a very difficult challenge to pass that on. If you have an increase in costs and you choose to increase your prices that you're giving to the consumer, you may lose margin at some point.
That's Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Our panelists in studio have included Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.